What really happened with your host, Mike Rivero? Because World War III is a really bad idea. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Friday, February 17th, 2017, getting on toward the end of the month here. And we have got lots and lots of stuff to talk about today. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer the phone when you call on in. And, of course, in our third hour today, the lovely Lady Claire will be joining us with her unique perspective on the world. So, getting right on into it, the swamp strikes back. Remember that old saying that when you're up to your rear end in alligators, it's hard to remember your job is to drain the swamp? Well, the alligators are definitely on full attack mode right now, as indicated by this political assassination of Michael Flynn, which basically was a soap opera. And I'm sure that our politicians still see themselves in the image of the founding fathers with dignity and gravitas, but to the rest of us, they're looking like a preschool full of tantrum-throwing children. And it really is quite a disgusting and humiliating display in the eyes of the world here. So, obviously, no signs of slowing down. The media is still out there with all their attacks. Now, here is a little observation. Ever since the judge put a stay on Donald Trump's temporary travel moratorium from seven countries, 60% of the refugees arriving in this country since that stay came from five of those seven countries. And even Syria's President Assad is saying, we know terrorists are using the refugee program to leave Syria and go to the United States of America. All it's going to take is one terror incident from one of these people from the targeted country, and Donald Trump is going to be vindicated. Not that he needs it. He's the president. He's got the authority to do this under Title VIII. The Ninth Circus Court of Appeals basically ignored the law, ignored the reality that there have been over 70 terror suspects arrested from those specific countries, ignored the fact that the seven countries list was put together by Bush and Obama. It's just, we've got an ideology, we have an agenda, we must serve the agenda to the exclusion of all other things. And to give you an idea of just how out of touch with the real world the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals is, back in 2011, they actually overturned the conviction of a man who posted internet messages threatening to kill President Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign. Now, obviously, he wasn't the president at that point, but still, threatening to kill somebody is pretty serious. It's a felony. And Walter Bagdasarian was convicted in 2009 of two felony counts of threatening a major presidential candidate. And the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals overturned the conviction, saying that threats to kill the president, or in this case the candidate, is an exercise of freedom of speech. And that is just a little bit out there, I think. Because I don't think freedom of speech includes threats. Well, it's a gray area, but there are reasons why you don't want to have this runaway idea thing of everyone saying, we got to kill the president, we got to kill the president, which is exactly what we have here right now. Now, one of the first victims in this war between Donald Trump and this swamp full of alligators and who knows what all else is in there in the muck, the corporate media is taking a shellacking. And apparently the government of Venezuela has now literally thrown CNN completely out of the country, accusing them of bogus and misleading reports intended to destabilize the Venezuelan government. Gee, you think? Now, somebody sent me this wonderful little illustration of media spin. And this is the Wall Street Journal on the same day, but published in different cities. And it's got the same picture of Donald Trump having this meeting with not Netanyahu, but one of the other Israeli people. And on one newspaper, it says Trump softens his tone. And the other one, it says Trump talks tough on Wall. So they're literally shaping the headlines to propagandize different regions of the country to try and get the message on out there. And it's all very fluid and flexible, which means none of it is really accurate. It's all spin all the time here. Now, President Trump may be a little bit more subtle than his persona may project. because he just tricked CNBC into confirming some of the damaging information about Hillary Clinton. So Trump was out there castigating the corporate media and talking about, you know, you need to do real news, and he said we had Hillary Clinton give Russia 20% of the uranium in our country. And eager to prove Trump wrong, CNBC's reporter got up and said, no. Hillary gave Russia 20% of U.S. uranium production capacity, which was something the corporate media had been denying all the way up to the election. And so, open mouth, insert foot, wipe egg from face, CNBC. Even Piers Morgan is saying the American corporate media has just lost its mind. It's in total thrash mode. And don't forget that we had this report last week where the websites of the major corporate media are artificially inflating their click numbers using Chinese botnets to make it look like they still have a lot of readers. And by the way, they're defrauding their advertisers in the process. We're going to do a quick shout out to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. Now, yesterday we had a caller on the line who was talking about this idea that the leaks and revelations that led to the downfall of Michael Flynn were actually part of a very clever sting. And I really didn't have much enthusiasm for that idea, because why sacrifice Michael Flynn? You don't need to do that. You can do it without actually causing any harm. And it does appear that Trump's White House is starting to play with what some people call the barium meal and others call the canary trap, which is Trump is sharing certain information only with certain individuals, and if it leaks out, now he knows who the leaker is. And this may have been the situation behind this story that Associated Press ran, saying that Trump was going to deploy 10,000 soldiers across the streets of America to round up those gosh darn immigrants and deport them. And, of course, the White House immediately denied it, said this was absolute fake. But now they know one of the leakers inside the White House. Now, speaking of leakers, Rex Tillerson is already coming down hard on the State Department. And while he's on his first overseas trip as Secretary of State, his aides laid off staff at the State Department, mostly the seventh floor staff who work for the Deputy Secretary of State for Management and Resources and the consular offices. And they've been told their services were no longer needed. And most of these people were the Hillary Clinton holdovers. So the scraping out of the gourd is well and truly underway, and Trump needs to keep on doing that, because he can't run an efficient administration if his own people are working against him. And I know he wanted to take the high ground and be generous and magnanimous in his victory and say, you guys can all keep your jobs. But again, Donald Trump comes from the world of business, where it is presumed, for the most part, that people are mostly loyal to the boss who signs their paycheck. Washington, D.C. is a completely different world. You're never really sure where people's allegiances lie. Could be with a foreign government, could be with the opposition party, could be with whoever's got the negatives of them cavorting with their secretary at a hot sheet motel. It's a very, very complex situation. So Trump is now starting to rethink his position about allowing holdovers into his administration because of all the problems that they've generated here. Now, story coming out of Newsmax. There is yet another study showing that millions of Hispanics may have voted illegally last year. And it's based on an analysis that was actually done back in 2013, conducted by McLaughlin and Associates. And basically, they went on out there and discovered 13% of all non-citizen Hispanics said they were registered to vote. And they're not supposed to be able to do that. Now, taking these numbers forward with other indicators and extrapolating to the entire American population, they came up with 2.1 million Hispanics may have voted illegally. This is getting into the same area as votefraud.org and truthevote.org. Their analysis of voter registration records indicated somewhere around 3 million non-citizens, which includes people who are not Hispanics as well. 3 million. That that's enough to swing elections all over the place. Then you have the dead vote, the people who were voting multiple times. Remember the Secretary of State of Kansas came on out and said we found all kinds of these problems going on? Hillary Clinton did not win the popular vote. She was trying to steal the election. And the only reason she failed to do it was the American people were united against allowing the Bush-Clinton duocracy to have their way with our nation, our people, and especially our children any longer. All right, we're going to take a phone call. Bob in Las Vegas, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Mike, I love that Putin T-shirt you're wearing.
Yeah, I thought that was going to catch the eye of some people here, and it arrived today. And down on the bottom, you can't really see it because there it is. It says, they will not catch us, I think is a paraphrasing of what it actually says. But yes, this has been my week to get all kinds of presents. I got that 1894 map of Palestine. An artist in Denmark sent some drawings of Claire and I. We're going to have those framed and put up on the wall. It's been really kind of, yeah, there's a lot of excitement out there. I'm having fun.
Yeah, it's actually on the delay. I just see the writing below it. It's in Russian. Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice T-shirt.
Yes. No, it is. Yeah, well, it is from Russia. This shirt is from Russia. This was sent to me as a gift.
That's great.
Yep.
I told you when I go back to Russia, I'm going to get you. I'll get you some more T-shirts. My foreign trip's actually going to be to Argentina and Uruguay, so I'll get you some stuff from there. Mike, I like that reference to John McCain and Charles Manson on your website. great stuff.
Yeah, well,
and I actually sent you something from Russia Insider. These two Russian guys, they do these prank phone calls.
I was just about to get that. That's the very next story I have after I'm done with this phone call.
It's great stuff. He thought he was speaking to the Ukrainian prime minister.
All right, well, let's just do the story here right now while you're on the phone here, and this is it. U.S. Senator John Songbird McCain got pranked by some Russian pranksters posing as Ukraine's prime minister, and they recorded the phone call. And on the phone call, Senator John McCain was divulging inside intelligence on U.S. secret policy to the Ukrainian. And he was actually talking to this Russian comedian, and apparently McCain was even coaching the phone prankster on joining NATO, and apparently shared classified information. And so McCain, and he intended to do this. He knew he was talking to somebody not legally entitled to have this information, and he thought he was talking to Ukraine's prime minister. And that is a violation of either Title 18, Section 798, or Title 18, Section 1905, depending upon the degree of classification there. But that's felony territory we're talking about here. And of course, you know, the corporate media is going to ignore this.
It doesn't say much for John McCain or his office that how could these two guys get through to him and have him think that he's speaking to the Ukrainian prime minister.
It's amazing that it could happen, and basically, if they could do it to McCain, then who knows who all else could bluff their way into McCain's confidence and start leeching more critical U.S. secrets from him. This is obviously a security risk, and it should be treated as one. But, you know, don't forget, despite McCain's reputation as a big hero, he cooperated with his North Vietnamese captors and when he was taken to Russia for his medical treatment. And he's not really a hero. And the only reason he was not prosecuted for his treason when he finally returned from Vietnam was Richard Nixon pardoned all the returning POWs en masse. And then they started building up the legend of John McCain, the heroic, you know, the man who resisted his torture. And at one point they tried to claim that the injuries to his arms were inflicted on him by the torturers. The reality was his ejection seat malfunctioned when he had to punch out of his airplane. But I mean, it's all a complete lie. And we're coming to realize our entire political class and corporate media, that is really all they know how to do. Get on out there and sell an image, sell an image, sell an image. I remember one of the things which really sort of illuminated me into the mindset of politicians was Bob Dole, who would always talk about himself in the third person. And Richard Nixon did the same thing. It's like their public political persona was a completely separate individual. And Nixon would go around and say, well, Nixon wouldn't do that, and Nixon wouldn't do this, and we're going to have to be very careful because Nixon never does that. And it just tells you it's all manufactured fraud and facade.
Yeah, well, these guys, well, the guy, the prankster caller, he actually made reference to this McCain-Songbird past in the phone call, the tail end of the phone call. It's interesting. He said that there's information, they have intelligence that Putin's going to release information to the U.S. of McCain's past. Now, he was brainwashed that he was a songbird. And McCain said, I look forward to that information. I'll speak to my staff to get more information. And, you know, if there's a great website, it's the UNS Review. Ron UNS runs it.
Yep.
And he's written some really good articles about John McCain. And this whole story about his time in those quote unquote POW camps. Finally, Mike, this whole Russian spy ship is such a joke. You know, you look at all the vessels U.S. has patrolling in the Black Sea, the Baltic Sea, the build up on Russia's western border, mm-hmm. and they're talking about this one sole Russian spy vessel. So it's just, typical
it's not like the U.S. doesn't have a fleet of their own surveillance spy ships. We see them coming in and going out of Pearl Harbor all the time. The USS Liberty, the Israel tried to attack it and sink it and frame Egypt for it, that was a surveillance ship.
Right. Well, thank you, Mike. Have a nice weekend.
All right, same to you, and we're going to switch over to Roseanne in North Carolina. Aloha, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. I was just listening about how they had punked John McCain with that prank phone call, but they also did Maxine Waters.
Yes.
And I just watched that last night. Do you know how long ago that was?
No, I don't. I was paying much more attention to the McCain one. But Maxine Waters doesn't need a Russian comedian to prank her. I mean, she opens her own mouth and she destroys her own credibility.
Oh, you mean with the Korea?
Yeah, with the Korea.
Yeah, I get it. But you could just hear her chomping at the bit she was falling all over herself. The disloyalty to our country is palpable with these people. It's disgusting.
Well, it's certainly disloyalty to the president, and they're going to wind up triggering a civil war if they keep going this way.
I agree. Take care. God bless.
All right. Thanks an awful lot here, and we're going to get back to the news. Turkey says they've almost taken Syria's al-Bab. It's apparently been a very, very intense fight. Syria is trying to basically control al-Bab, take it away from ISIS, and at the same time try and keep the Kurdish militia from gaining ground in there as well. It's actually this very complicated three-way situation where you've got the U.S. that's really still after Assad, you've got Turkey that wants to push ISIS and the Syrian forces back from their border, at the same time stop the expansion of the Kurdish. It is a huge, huge mess, and I guess you need a scorecard for all of that. And it all goes back to this example being set by the United States government. You know, yes, we can just go in and overthrow anybody's country, and we can do what we want because we are exceptional, which really isn't all that accurate. All right, we're going to talk about the economic news here a little bit. Apparently, they are starting to see a major surge in the seriously delinquent auto loans. Now, a lot of people who have bought cars on credit are behind maybe a month or two. When they're talking seriously delinquent, that's months behind on their payments, where the banks are having to say, we're either going to have to repossess or write off the loan. And again, you cannot run a national economy totally on debt. That's been the big lie of private central banking for the last 100 years. Because again, private central banks create more debt than money with which to pay that debt until the system breaks down, which is what's going on right now. So we are seeing indicators. Gold prices are still bouncing all over. But Craig Hemke is saying demand for physical gold is going to increase this year. And that has to drive the prices up no matter how much rigging is going on. We're going to take a break for commercials, and we'll be right back. Hello, hi, America. Welcome back to the show. Now, as we were mentioning before that commercial break, Craig Hemke is saying physical demand for gold is going to increase this year. There is a real mess out there in gold. The Federal Reserve is managing to get enough gold back to finish repatriation demands for Germany. We don't know about the other countries just yet. The other big problem is the paper gold contracts, which are leveraged literally hundreds to one. Any other commodity that was leveraged like that would be under investigation. And at some point, people are going to say, I am not happy with a piece of paper. This contract I got from you says you're going to give me the physical gold on this date, and when that date arrives, I'm going to want it. There's a growing lack of trust and confidence in all of these paper equities markets players with all the revelations of fraud that's been going on lately. Now, interestingly enough, even though we are seeing the European and American economic systems try and discourage the holding of precious metals as wealth preservation, oddly enough, the governor of the central bank in Kyrgyzstan is saying it's his dream that every single citizen should own at least 100 grams of gold to protect their savings. That's 3.5 ounces, which is a pretty sizable holding of gold. And so here we have a governor of a central bank saying this is a good idea for people to have gold to protect their savings. I'm absolutely in agreement with him. Especially as we hear more and more about negative interest rate savings accounts, laws that allow the banks to dip into your wealth to save themselves, and the continuing screaming about a cashless society and ultimately a ban on silver and gold investment coins in private ownership. They want you totally dependent on the financial system for every aspect of your life, and dependency is slavery. Ownership of your of a store of value that is under your control means freedom. And that's what they're trying to take away. Story coming out of Investment Watch blog. European Union nations are just plunging further into debt. There are protests, calls for reform, but the European Union itself, Brussels, continues to push for a joint monetary union. They want to try and centralize it even more. All these private central banks are in trouble. We can fix it with a much larger private central bank. No, you can't. It's like backing up the Titanic, whacking that iceberg on the other side, and hoping the leak is going to stop. And economists are saying the EU is finished, because when the single currency collapses, the EU will collapse with it. And it may already be starting to happen, because over in Greece, bank runs have started up again. $3.2 billion withdrawn since the start of this year, and the bankers are freaking out. People are getting their wealth out of the banks in the form of currency. That is why the banks are saying, oh, we got to have a cash-free society, so there is no currency, so there's no way for you to get your money out of the bank. You'll just have to leave it there for the banks to play with and possibly lose, which is going to happen. More bad news on the retail sector here in the United States of America. GNC, the General Nutrition Centers, are going to close 100 stores. They have suffered a $433 million fourth quarter loss. And here is the real tragedy of it. Stores like GNC, Whole Foods, Down to Earth, their clientele, their market niche, are people concerned about the safety of food you get from ordinary supermarkets. But unfortunately, buying food that is free of chemical additives, non-GMO, certified organic, it costs more. And as the economy continues to tighten, people are literally having to make the choice of saying, all right, I can't go and get safe, healthy food to eat anymore. I'm just going to have to get the bargain stuff down at the market, cross my fingers, and hope it doesn't kill me. And so these stores that were trying to cater to a real market need are being driven out of business by the collapsing economy. We're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we were talking before the commercial break about General Nutrition Centers, GNC, having to shut a whole bunch of their stores. And that is a shame. We have one down here at the bottom of the hill. which we occasionally take some of our business to. We also go to Down to Earth. But in a way, the strangling economy is removing another area of choice for the American people. That choice whether you're going to eat food you know to be safe and healthy and nutritious, as opposed to this corporate-produced PAP of questionable nutritional value and certain chemical contamination, and you're not going to have a choice. You will eat the GMOs. Sieg Heil. MC Sports has announced all 66 of their stores will be closing. They are now basically out of business as well. In fact, I would say this continues a trend we saw with some of these other sports accessory stores, because they're catering to people who have disposable income, people who have paid their rent, their Obamacare insurance, their car payments and everything, and they got a little bit left over to enjoy some caprices. Whether it's sports activity or hiking or whatever, they can't do that anymore. Everybody's been driven down to just pure survival. And any retail establishments that are marketing over and above that, they're in serious, serious trouble. Right now, in the United States, credit card debt has topped $1 trillion, the worst it's been since the Great Recession. And you know how usurious the interest rates on those cards are. And that is by design. That's what keeps you a slave to the bankers. Perpetual debt. And the earlier they can get you stuck on that barbed hook, the better. That's why the scholarships dried up and very, very flexible student loans were being offered to get kids to go to college, get a degree in art history or women's studies or something. And they get out of college, there are no jobs, especially in those fields. And they're stuck with that debt. They are a debt slave. The slaves of the United, we're a slave society. We don't wear chains of steel, we're wearing paper chains. And the paper is from those Federal Reserve notes and those credit card statements. And they don't want to let you go. It's not a question of you not being able to get out of debt. The system is set up to keep you from ever getting out of debt. They don't want you breaking free. Speaking of college, the college debt bubble has been accelerating, and in just a few years, it'll be $2 trillion. If something is not done, and they're starting to see delinquencies and defaults there as well. And a big part of this goes back to a phenomenon that occurred in the run-up to the 2008 mortgage-backed security fraud meltdown, which was called the breaking of the securitization chain. And here's how it worked. In the good old days, let's say I have a small depositor bank in a community, and somebody would come in and say, I would like a mortgage for a house. And I would sit them down and I would say, okay, what are your assets? What are your liabilities? What kind of money are you making? How much can you afford monthly in a mortgage payment? Shave a little off for the unexpected. Run the spreadsheet and say, I can offer you a mortgage for this much money. And I would take that precaution. I would do the due diligence because, obviously, if I'm issuing the mortgage, I want to make sure it is going to be paid back. During the run-up to the mortgage-backed security fraud, that chain was broken. The people issuing the mortgages weren't concerned whether they could be repaid or not, because their job was to get the signature on the mortgage, then bundle all those mortgages together, and then sell them off to somebody else who would then be offering them as an investment vehicle. The securitization chain was broken, and that's why it got out of control. That's why we got the subprime home loans, and now we've got subprime auto loans, and gee, we're getting defaults on those. Imagine my shock. Because the people issuing the loans are no longer directly tied into whether those loans are ever repaid or not. And that is where they went hideously, hideously wrong. Now, over at ESPN, they're losing thousands of subscribers literally every single day. And ESPN is just struggling. They're owned by Disney right now, and the ESPN losses are dragging Disney's overall profitability down with it. And Fox Sports Radio host Clay Travis is saying the problem is ESPN has set itself up as the social justice warrior network, where in between all the sports and everything, they're pushing various liberal political ideology. Well, people, let's remember, ESPN was supposed to be a sports network. People who are turning into ESPN, they want to watch hockey and football and baseball and basketball and swimming and fencing and all that other stuff. They're not there for a political discussion. And when it's being thrown at them, they're turning off. Just because you're successful in one area of enterprise that you have worked to build doesn't mean that you should just figure you can go on out and do something else entirely different and not pay the price for it. And as we look at some of the spectacular business failures we've seen over the last several years, we see this time and again, where a company over long years of work will build itself a place in the market serving a specific clientele, then all of a sudden they'll say, well, we can expand, we can diversify, we can do this, and they abandon their original clientele to try and grab a bigger chunk of the general market, and they collapse. And I can think of no better example of that than Radio Shack. Now, when I was a kid, Radio Shack was one of my absolute favorite stores to go to. The other one was we had this, this was in West Covina, and we had this really nice toy store where you could buy science materials, where they had a big rack in the back where you could get your chemistry ware, and you could buy bottles of chemicals, and you could make all kinds of stuff. You know, these were the days of like Erector sets and Meccano. And the idea was, you know, if you burned yourself on a chemical experiment, well, that'll learn you. Don't do that again. As opposed to the over-safe things we have in Toys R Us now, which people, you can't think. You can't design your own experiments and whatever. So, anyway, back to Radio Shack. I love to go to Radio Shack because they sold parts. They sold lots of parts. And they sold books on how to make things. And I would make my own printed circuit boards. I built a metal detector. I built a CB radio. I built a short wave. That was cool. That was fun. And Radio Shack was very, very successful. And then all of a sudden, somewhere along the line, somebody at Radio Shack said, you know something, we're these techno dweebs and everything, it's not a big enough population. We're going to ignore them, and we're going to start trying to play to the general consumer market by selling the same cell phones and gadgets and gizmos everybody else is selling. And they got into trouble. They abandoned their original clientele, and they started selling the same thing everybody else was selling, and they couldn't gain market share because everybody else was already selling the same things. The same exact cell phones, the same exact tablets, the same exact consumer-level stuff. And they got into trouble. ESPN has made the same mistake. They built their fame and fortune and reputation on being the sports network, and then they turned into propagandists for the liberal agenda, and then they're surprised that people are turning off the channel. They shouldn't be. When you alienate your clientele on which you've built your business, you are going to pay a hideous price for it. All right, we're going to take some phone calls here. Ron in Missouri, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, Mike. Talking about paper gold. In my email I received one day where you convert your IRA into a gold IRA,
mm-hmm.
I thought, great. So I gave him a call, and it sent me a beautiful package. I read it through, and everything sounded good, until I got to the point where they restored my gold for me into vaults. Mm-hmm. And then I got a return phone call from the people, and I said, it asked me how it sounded to me. I said, it sounded great. It got to the point where you had my gold. I didn't. I said, if you could give me my gold in my hand, I'd be happy. I would do it. They said fine, we could do that. I said, you can? I said, you can actually give me my gold, I can hold it in my hand. They said, yes, I can. I said, we'll send you an email on it. I said, fine. Of course, never received an email from them. Ha! So,
Well,
that's pretty much the end of that.
Here's the thing. In the original model of gold vaulting, the gold was supposed to be allocated, like it originally was at the New York Federal Reserve. There was literally a box that had the name of a bank, a country, or your name into which the physical gold was there, and it was allocated to you. Okay. Then gold vaulting companies and brokerages started playing the same game that banks do, fractional reserve banking. They would sell $1 million worth of gold, but they only really had about $100,000 of physical gold on the premises to cover a reasonable expected number of claims for the physical metal. The rest of it was just made up fairy tale, not really there. And that was called the unallocated gold storage, because the gold that was in their vault could be grabbed and handed to whoever came in the door with the paper contract. And it's a way of kind of fudging things, because they're out there, they've sold $1 million worth of gold, they've made the profit from selling $1 million worth of gold, but they only actually have that $100,000. And it's just like banks who can take in $1,000 in deposits and then turn it around and loan out $6,000 in instantly generated credit. And it's all really a fraud and a scam if you think about it. And we're told it's legal and the Congress says it's okay and we should just trust the bankers. They know what they're doing. And we can look around us today at the quality of our lives, the quality of our infrastructure, Oroville, and see, no, it isn't working. It's just a system that is set up to defraud the masses to benefit the money junkies.
Yes, I agree with you. So for your listeners, I would recommend, if anybody wants to go that route, make sure you can get your gold in your hands. If not, forget about it.
I absolutely agree, because there is not enough gold to cover all those paper contracts that are out there right now. If you're going to buy physical precious metals, and I recommend it highly in small amounts so there's no record, so they don't know whose door to kick down. But just a little bit every once in a while, and over time it'll build on up. And you get the physical, because there at some point will be a run on the metals brokerages. And most of the people holding those paper promissory contracts, that's all they're going to get. Or they may get more stacks of ink and paper to make them feel better about it. But those stacks, as they print up more stacks of ink and paper, it's going to be worth less and less. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. People should be investing in silver and gold and other precious metals, and they should never accept a paper contract, because then they're playing the game the way the bankers want the game played, and the way the bankers want the game played is always going to benefit the bankers.
I love your show, Mike. You do great work. I'm looking forward to seeing Claire there.
She's going to be here in a little while. We've got the chair already set up here, so she's closer to the camera. Thank you for the call. We're going to switch over to Kyle in Pennsylvania. Aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I wanted to double back to what you were saying about ESPN losing their subscribers.
Yes.
Where there's a guy, Charles Johnson, the founder of, made an investment strategy based on shorting companies that practice diversity tactics and social justice. His strategy, something like 48% more profitable than the average Wall Street broker. Some of his big hits were Target, Twitter, I'm assuming ESPN. So it holds true. But people do not want this sort of social justice, diversity.
We're fed up with political correctness. And, he's brilliant, and he's right. Every one of these companies that gets caught up in the political correctness and transgender, this and all the rest of it, they immediately get into economic trouble, and anybody who's there who's short-selling them is going to make a lot of money.
Twitter went from $42 a share at a low point down to $8 a share. It got to the point where they tried to sell Twitter, and it had become so unprofitable, nobody would buy it, which then drove the stock down even further. So, yeah, people don't want cross-pollination with their sports, with their social media, with whatever, their shopping, and diversity. They keep those things separate. And if you want to make some money, short companies that announce they're going to do some sort of social justice policy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right here. And certainly with the realm of Twitter and Facebook – and the other older social media that are openly practicing censorship and biasing and filtering. People are starting to leave those as well and going over to the new startup social media, which at least for the time being seems to be censorship-free and bias-free. One of the things that's always angered me greatly about YouTube is my wife has all these music videos up there, and they're not really political. Some of them are, but most of them aren't. And we'll see the view counts go up, the view counts go up, and then all of a sudden the magic view count fairy shows up in the middle of the night and the view counts go way, way down again.
Well, look what YouTube just did with that PewDiePie guy, who I can't say I've ever seen one of his videos. From what I understand, he is the largest YouTuber of all time. Mainstream media, Wall Street Journal, Wired, they come up with some bogus story that he's anti-Semitic. Now his videos are getting age restrictions in front of them. They're getting warnings about content in front of them. And they're videos that have nothing to do with what this fake news has, accused him of doing. So now all of a sudden, the most successful YouTuber in the world is getting clipped for
yes.
no reason.
No, we've seen that too. I'm getting reports from people that they're unable to post stories from my website to Facebook, and they get a message it's blocked because it's a hate site or it's unsafe or something else like that. And one of the things that really angers me about the net nanny style filtering companies is they'll blacklist the website purely on the basis of somebody sending in a complaint through the website. They don't actually verify if the complaint is valid. So the people who are against the First Amendment, the people who are against freedom, all they have to do is have five or six people hit the website for the filtering company and say, oh, this website is full of pictures of naked polar bears. And the next thing you know, you're blacklisted, and it can take weeks for them to finally realize that they've been had and you've been blocked and get off the list here. Anyway, listen, thanks for the phone call. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're still talking about the economic news here, and we're coming up on the top of the hour, a little more than an hour. The Lady Claire will be joining us here. Right now, California, their economy is not doing very good. They're literally groaning under the strain of all the illegal immigrants and the refugees. The other day, we were talking about how Governor Jerry Brown is spending $25 million a year propping up the illegal immigrants and had no money left over to repair the cracks in the spillway at the Oroville Dam, which appeared in 2009. And all they did was paint them over with a concrete solution, which was a temporary patch only. The workers on the dam were calling it the patch and pray system. Now, interestingly enough, California right now has 12 million, more than 12 million people enrolled on Medicaid or the CHIP programs. It really has become a welfare state out there. And from welfare state to pure socialism is a very short leap. And I know there's a lot of people who are out there saying, well, we should be socialists, we should this. We have to defeat capitalism and become communist. You need to look at the condition of the Soviet Union just before it collapsed. It was not in good shape. They were having the exact same visible symptoms we see in the United States right now. Crumbling roads, collapsing bridges, the meltdown at Chernobyl. After a while, all those bread and circuses can destroy even the mightiest of empires. Now, interestingly enough, story out of governmentslaves.info, where apparently members of the black community are now standing opposed to the sanctuary cities, because in the sanctuary cities, the illegals are taking all the jobs. So that part of the liberal platform, philosophy, if you will, is starting to factionalize here. Now, up in Oregon, there's been a burst of common sense out there. Lawmakers are pushing to repeal the sanctuary state designation and to declare English the official language of the state and not go down this road of having to spend money to have signs in multiple languages. I remember down when we lived in Los Angeles, everything was multilingual. And sometimes it was just convenient for economic sake, like here in Hawaii, tourist hub from all over the Pacific, a lot of stuff is multilingual. But in Southern California, you had all these people coming in from Mexico just saying, you have to write everything in Spanish. We don't want to learn English, which is a very arrogant and rude thing to do. When you are going into somebody else's home, to be courteous, you learn how to get along in their home. When I was working in Europe, I made a serious effort to learn Italian and German. And I didn't make much progress, and the people I was working with all spoke excellent English, thank goodness. But the fact that I made the effort won me a tremendous amount of respect. All right, we're going to take a break for station identification. We'll be right back. And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. Hour number two. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. I want to step back into the news about various war zones because we're just now getting word that the government of Syria has sent a message to the government of Turkey saying, you will remove your military forces from our territory. We were reporting earlier on how Turkish forces were about to capture al-Dab. And Syria is saying, we don't want you to do that. So there's going to be a little friction and tension. And again, Turkey doesn't have the permission of Syria's government to be there any more than the United States does. It is an unprovoked aggression. Alrighty, getting on back to this immigration situation. Yesterday, there was this attempt to have a protest across the country. A day without immigrants, where immigrants, both legal and illegal, would not go to their jobs, would not go to school, would just stay at home to prove just how society would fall apart if it weren't for the presence of the immigrants. And frankly, I didn't even notice anything different. And I'm willing to almost wager that those who were due to collect their various government assistance checks yesterday did, in fact, show on up. But it was a major fail. It was a major fail. And I have to wonder at the mentality of the person who thought this was, had any chance of working anyway. Now, the fight over Brexit is really beginning to heat on up ever since Tony Blair has stepped back on in, saying, we will find a way to keep Great Britain enslaved to the European Union. And we don't need a new vote. We'll find some way to do it. We have to fight for what we believe in. Well, I thought we believed in democracy, but apparently not. That's such an old-fashioned thing. You voters should just shut up. We elites know really what's best for ourselves. I mean, for you. And the interesting thing is Tony Blair's wading back on in has actually provoked a furious backlash against him, and he's been called patronizing and various other names. IDS came on out and said just a blistering assault, saying Blair should not be there. This idea that we're going to have Tony Blair coming in late in the day lecturing after advising quasi-dictators around the world what to do, he seems to have forgotten what democracy is about. Democracy is about asking people a question and then acting on it, and that's what we did, and that's what we're doing at the moment. The government and Theresa May is doing exactly the right thing. The idea that you just keep on asking the British people until they give you the answer that you want, which is his case, is arrogant. I'm paraphrasing loosely a little bit there. Boris Johnson responded to Tony Blair saying, you know, go away. We're still cleaning up your Iraq mess. And apparently there's been a flashback on Twitter. They're calling him yesterday's man. And he may have just united all of Britain in favor of Brexit with this arrogant display. He's been called the enemy of the people. The world is definitely changing. And the elites don't know how to deal with it. They're still trying to play the game by the rules that worked 20 or 30 years ago, and they don't anymore. They're out of their depth. When confronted with a population of thinking, rational, analytical, skeptical people, they don't know what to do. Now, over in Brussels, European Council, not the Parliament has no authority, the Council has voted to push forward some major reforms, including a finance minister for all of the European Union, to whom the finance ministers of the member nations will now be subordinate. They're moving forward on a European Union army, I guess to slap down uppity member states, and a central tax ministry, all of which are basically declaring the European super state as opposed to a European Union. And remember, all the way back when this started, the European Union was sold to the people of Europe as just a free trade, free travel bloc. That was it. We're going to have an outer border around the European Union, and inside that border, you don't need passports to go from France to Germany to Italy or whatever, and you can trade between France and Germany and Great Britain without having to deal with customs and tariffs and the rest of it. And everybody says, oh, that's a great idea. And then all of a sudden, the European Union starts developing this metastatic tumor in Brussels and grabbing more and more power. And they're pushing ahead with this idea of creating a federalized super state where the individual member nations of the European Union are reduced to the same level as one of the United States. And this has caused a reaction in Great Britain where they're saying, we can't wait, we have to leave now. Because the EU is trying to come up with some kind of a mechanism to say, some technicality, well, you can't leave until we say so. And they're creating that super state, and now the pressure is on Theresa May to get out of the EU now, no matter what it takes, and not let them drag this situation out. Now, over in Hungary, which is a Eurosceptic country, their prime minister is blasting the EU, primarily the European Council and Juncker, as being self-righteous in this fanatical devotion to the creation of the super state. And it looks like there's going to be a political battle between Hungary and the EU this year. We're going to take a moment to do a shout-out to our honor affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. It is looking worse and worse for Angela Merkel, despite all the election fraud that might be out there to help her. Same thing with Hillary Clinton. Massive election fraud could not save her, and the same is now true with Merkel. Her poll numbers are just plunging. And it's looking less and less certain every week that she even has a chance of hanging on to her job. Meanwhile, over in France, Marine Le Pen is leading by 5% in the first round of French voting. And it looks like she is going to get 26% in the first round of voting. Mr. Macron is taking 21%, and Mr. Fillon 20, although his long-term viability as a candidate appears in trouble because of that scandal involving improper payments to his wife. Now, the former Czech president is out there with a note of optimism, saying the dissolution of the European Union could be a great opportunity for Europe. And he's absolutely right. And he's pointing out there, the original idea of the European Union got corrupted. It's supposed to be free trade, free travel, and it got corrupted into this tyrannical dictatorship, and it's starting to tear itself apart, long overdue. And the nations of Europe, freed from this often ridiculously gratuitous flood of regulations that Brussels uses to justify its continued existence, and freed of the overburden of all that added bureaucracy and taxation, their economies are going to start taking off. I think that's a good thing, personally. Okay, now, interesting little concept, this whole sanctuary city thing, is starting to spread beyond the idea of illegal immigrants. And more people are saying, while this idea of a sanctuary city to protect the illegal immigrants has not worked out very well for those cities that declare themselves sanctuaries, that the same principle, now that the precedent is set, can be used in other areas, other cities and states who feel that federal laws violate the Constitution And the prime focus for this is that Second Amendment, where certain cities and states are starting to say, we are going to be a sanctuary city for the Second Amendment. If you are living in our cities, in our states, and you are a law-abiding gun owner, and you're following all of the state rules, we will not allow the federal government to come on in and enforce gun laws that are clearly in violation of the Second Amendment. So the people pushing sanctuary cities to allow the illegal immigrants to openly defy U.S. law and the Constitution may have opened up a major vector for people who want to preserve our legal right to keep and bear arms. Now, I came from a culture where gun ownership was just a given. Everybody had guns. You got your first gun on your 12th birthday, and you would get that lecture on gun safety, which was the second religion in our community. You were told, this is not a toy. You don't handle it the way you see in TVs and movies. It's a tool to varmint the garden, put food on the table in winter, chase bad people out of your home if that's necessary, although where I grew up, that wasn't necessary. You ever got caught goofing around with that gun, you'd get a trip to the woodshed, would keep you eating your dinner standing up for a week. We never had mass shootings. We never had drive-by shootings. We would take our guns to school. We would put them in the cloakroom when we got to school. There was a rack. And on the way home, we would take our guns because on our way home from school, we would walk through our farm fields and we'd chase out the critters that were, you know, helping themselves to our crops. And that was just the way life was. In all the years I lived in that town in New Hampshire, there was only one mishap with a gun, which was an attempted suicide that went wrong. That was it. We didn't have the out-of-control gun violence we're seeing in these gun control heavens like Chicago. Everybody around where we lived, we all knew everybody else had a gun. Keeps you nice and polite and respectful. Now then, we've been talking about this whole political correctness idea where they're trying to say, oh, you should be shocked and offended by this, and you shouldn't be shocked and offended by that. And I want to reiterate something I said the other day, which actually generated quite a surge of email. When you are a brand new baby, nothing shocks you. I mean, let's face it, you're an appetite at one end and no sense of responsibility at the other. And you are not shocked by nudity, yours or anybody else's. You're not shocked by words. You are not shocked by certain lifestyles. You are not shocked by any of that. It's all learned, imposed behavior to shape you to be useful to somebody. Some master somewhere wants to have ways of controlling you. You're taught to be shocked at certain words. So when you're in a debate with somebody who sees themselves as your master, they can use the words on you, and you will stop thinking rationally. And you will go into your conditioned program dance of, oh, I'm shocked and I'm upset, I heard a bad word. And the other person, by default, will win the argument. It's part of the control mechanism. You need to understand that. And these PC people are trying to decide for you what you will be shocked about and what you will not be shocked about in order to make you compliant to their agenda. And the next two stories illustrate that perfectly. Over in Great Britain, one of the major British theater companies, the Royal Courts Theater, is now going to issue trigger warnings for the plays being performed in order to prevent audience distress. You will be warned ahead of time that there may be certain things like nudity or bad words or violence because they don't want to spoil your experience. Now, in my day, all theater, and by extension movies, all good theater, is supposed to confront and challenge the viewer to get them to think. That was the main reason for the popularity of the original 1960s Star Trek. Now, they've sent the negatives through Telecine, to make them into a high-def format. They're rerunning on BBC. And you can tell the production values are not at all like we see today. What made the show interesting was that it went out there and challenged accepted social norms. And it got people to think. And today, some of what they did would be considered shocking. Some of what they did in the 1960s was shocking. TV's first interracial kiss between Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura occurred on Star Trek. And everybody said, ooh, ooh, ooh. Now, if you're going to have a theater company in Great Britain issuing warnings, you're going to have a big, long list outside, in the case of any of Shakespeare's plays, especially Titus Andronicus. You will be shocked by these things. You know, I mean, let's be honest. If you truly want entertainment free of triggers, don't go to the theater. Sell your ticket to a scalper, stay home, watch Sesame Street. Now, on the other side of the coin, where the PCers want to convince you that there are things you should not be shocked about, the Fox TV's The Mick had a scene recently in which two underage boys in a bathtub full of bubble bath are waiting for an underage girl to join them for a threesome. Now, obviously, nothing explicit is being shown, but at the same time, the idea is that underage sex and threesomes and everything is okay. You shouldn't be bothered by that. Now, I'm a big boy. I'm going to decide for myself what shocks me and what doesn't. Actually, at my age, not a whole heck of a lot does. But that's my choice. I don't need anybody coming in to tell me how I should feel or think about anything, whether it's nudity, homosexuality, racial issues. I can make up my own mind. And you should, too. We're all big people. We're all adults. We don't need the TV networks and the politically correct people and the government treating us like we're morons, like we've all got autism, telling us how we should feel about everything, because they're not doing that for our benefit. They're trying to shape our biases and beliefs to make us useful to their particular agenda. And you know something, at my age, I don't feel like being useful to anybody's agenda, except my own, and possibly Claire's. That's it. All right, little kind of an interesting story here. Apparently, with Donald Trump's success in the White House, they're trying to revitalize the Apprentice franchise. And the new version is the Celebrity Apprentice, and the first run of it featured Arnold Schwarzenegger as the host, and apparently the ratings were so bad, he's fired, and they're going to be replacing him real, real quickly. And it's kind of amazing to realize, because he was a good actor, he is a good actor. He's very funny in person, too. And having been the governor of California, but apparently it just the magic wasn't there. But he is very funny, which is hard to do in your second language. Now then, let's get into science and technology and energy here. Apparently, U.S. solar capacity has nearly doubled over this last year, blowing away previous records. People are going solar, and it's a good idea. We have some good news out here in Hawaii, because there was a big surge in solar when it was first introduced, and Claire and I were still doing local commercials. We did one for one of the companies, and we still see the imagery we made all over the island here. And then all of a sudden, the Hawaiian Electric Company got very, very nervous about all these people who were getting solar and cutting into their profits. And so they lobbied the state government to start restricting building permits for the addition of solar to properties. And, of course, that was a hammer blow to the solar companies. And now the pendulum has swung the other way, and the state of Hawaii is now allowing a limited number of new building permits for people to start adding solar back onto their homes. I think it's a great idea for a couple of reasons. One, solar is clean, cheap electricity. Two, it's decentralized. We're always hearing everybody screaming about possible acts of terror, possible acts of terror. Where is the terrorist going to attack? Any kind of central control over what we need, a centralized power plant for one, or a centralized water distribution, or centralized banking or everything. If everybody is providing their own electricity, they're immune from the effects of an act of terror on a generating station miles and miles and miles away. Doesn't that make a lot of sense? But without centralization, they can't monopolize, control, and profit from. There's the dilemma. All right, we're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back. Join us on the air, 800-313-9443. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go ahead and take a phone call. Nick in Southern California, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Mike. Hey, I was calling to ask you a question about solar, but just kind of you and I had discussed before. I grew up in Southern California. I literally just left the shooting range. People of all colors and, you know, genders and everything, they're all there. It's alive and well here in SoCal.
Well, I mean, you know, I did a lot of shooting in Southern California. You know, I was into black powder, and I used to go up into the Chileo area in the San Gabriel Mountains. But isn't it amazing when you go to a gun range how nice and polite and respectful everybody is? It's a great bunch of people. You'd invite them all to come home and, you know, have, you know, crackers and beer with you. I mean, compare the people at a gun store with those shoppers pouring into the front of the big box stores on Black Friday. you want to know where the threat of violence in the streets of America is coming from, and it's not the gun owners.
Yeah, the out-of-control consumerism and the lack of our money to support that consumerism. You know, and I also find that at the gun range, I think with the Second Amendment being so embattled, everybody kind of feels that whole, you know, we're all sort of persecuted a little bit, you know, so we're all kind of friendly with each other, too.
Well, you know, here's the weird thing. Every time there is a Muslim that commits a rape or sets a fire or any of these crimes, all we ever hear is we shouldn't judge all of the Muslims by the action of this one crazed individual. And that every time there's any kind of a mass shooting, the first thing they say is, oh, all gun owners are to blame. The gun manufacturers share the guilt. We've got to take guns away from everybody. Why can't we, legal gun owners in the United States of America, get the same deal the Muslim refugees get? That's what I want to ask right there.
Well, I think that has to do with, what do you say about liberals and double standards?
Yeah, if they didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all.
Yeah, I wanted to set you up for that one. But for the solar, one of the questions I had is, yeah, I like the idea of decentralization, protecting against a terrorist attack. That's not the main reason I would get solar. I'm not quite that worried about it. But now what would happen with an EMP? Is there a way to make solar hardened to, you know, so that the photovoltaic cells and all the different circuitry is protected against an EMP?
Well, if all your power lines are conduited, but you need to understand that EMP's effects are most severe along long transmission lines, where that magnetic pulse can sort of build up over miles and miles and miles. And as a matter of fact, that's why centralized power stations are susceptible to EMP, because of the high tension lines radiating on out. Within a small area, the EMP is too small to have an effect. That's why when EMP was first discovered by accident right here in Hawaii from a nuclear test outside the atmosphere, things plugged into the wall were all affected. Battery-operated radios and flashlights and everything survived just fine.
So basically, if there's an EMP, say somebody detonated a nuclear device in the atmosphere above Los Angeles, which I live not too far from, you know, my car might still work.
Yes.
Anything that's not plugged into, you know, that kind of thing would still be okay.
Yes, yes. EMP in the movies has been kind of oversold as everything would explode and melt, and it really isn't like that. When it happened here in Honolulu, it basically resulted in an overvoltage surge on the electric power grid, and that burned out things that were plugged into that grid. And that was it. But there weren't sparks and fires and everything. And yes, you could paralyze a city if it's dependent on a centralized power station, but if you have independent power, generators, solar cells and whatnot, you're going to be immune, and that's why more and more of our military bases have their own isolated power systems in order that they will continue to run even in the event of an EMP attack.
And that kind of, you know, and I'll let you, you know, I'll let you go here. I know you got a lot to get to, but what that made me think of was, what if we did somehow manage to go to something like Electro? You know, that might kind of, hinder our ability to transfer our, you know, our currency to somebody else over Carla.
Well, that certainly wouldn't affect the, it wouldn't be just the Electro. I mean, anything that's on any kind of a computer system would be paralyzed, unless those computer systems were on battery backup. Anyway, listen, got to let you go. We'll be right back after these few words. And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Now, a couple of follow-on comments about electromagnetic pulse. And in hindsight, the nuclear scientists who were playing with these bombs back during the days of Pacific testing, I probably should have realized something was going to happen, because you have Earth's magnetic field, and you have power stations that connect to the customers over these very long pieces of wire. Now, a nuclear bomb burst outside the atmosphere creates its own pulse of energy and particles, which can temporarily cause the Earth's magnetic field to move, and then it will move back. Well, what happens when you have a magnetic field moving next to a wire? You get an electric current. And by the way, this has happened without needing a nuclear weapon. Some of the really famous major blackouts along the northeast in Canada were actually triggered by solar flares until they learned how to build protection into that system. So in terms of computers still working after a nuclear attack, an impulse, as long as the power systems are protected and isolated, things are going to work, because these days, most of the internet around the world is now on fiber optic cables, and fiber optic cables are immune to the electromagnetic pulse. So I hope that's kind of cleared a few things up there. Now then, boy, if you're in Los Angeles, I know that one caller is living close to LA, they're looking at one of the biggest storms to hit Southern California in years. They're expecting 10 inches of rain and 70-mile-per-hour winds. And I remember when I lived in Los Angeles, we got some very, very spectacular storms. And, you know, as long as I'm safe at home, I love a good storm. Just turn off the TV, go on out to the back, and watch the lightning. That's my idea of good entertainment, nature's fireworks right there. There was one exception to that, and that was during my days when I was doing a lot of rag setting. And I was palling around with somebody, and we'd sailed out to Catalina, and we were hearing warnings, big storm coming in, and unfortunately the person I was with, who was captain of the sailboat we were on, decided to test his manliness and seamanship and started back for San Pedro from Twin Harbors right into the middle of that storm. And, boy, you know what they say? Nobody ever died from seasickness. You just wish you could. And it was that bad. And there was, we were hearing on the radio, the aid channel, there was another boat, not much larger than ours, that got into some serious trouble very close to where we were. But we made it back, and I didn't talk to him for quite a while afterwards. But you can get some amazing, amazing storms. Obviously, issues of runoff, flooding from poorly maintained flood control channels. And we're all talking about the Oroville Dam. There are other dams in the United States which have question marks over them in terms of, are they still as sturdy as when they were first built? And that can be a major, major issue. Looking at the Oroville radar right now, speaking of which, the rain has started. It is already heavier than they were predicting in the long-range forecasts. So, again, fingers crossed for those people in Oroville right now. We're going to take a phone call from Lou in California. Aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. How are you? Guten Abend. Wie geht's?
Ah, wie geht's? Yes. Das ist gut.
Yeah. I got a gun issue question there. It has to do with Proposition 63 here in California. By chance, do you know, Mike, if there has been any lawsuit activity on Proposition 63 by, like, maybe the NRA or gun owners of California?
Well,
not
living in California, I'm not familiar with Proposition 63. Can you give us a brief summary?
Well, it's about having to pay a fee for, I believe it's a license or permit to purchase ammunition beginning this year, and then a ban on large capacity magazines for semi-automatic rifles and carbines, you know.
They're trying to copy the New York law. The license and fee on the ammunition is just another way of grabbing money away from citizens, and because it specifically targets gun owners, it may be struck down as a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. As far as the large capacity magazines, I know there are a lot of people who like large capacity magazines, but it's been demonstrated already by expert shooters that they can swap magazines fast enough where it's really not a significant situation. And maybe I'm just biased and prejudiced because my shooting experience is with black powder, where you learn to put that first shot where it's needed, or the fight is over, and you don't need to hose down an entire target area. And that's just a personal prejudice. But again, being a strict constitutionalist, I think law-abiding gun owners should be allowed to have whatever it is they want to have. And remember, at one point, the Supreme Court ruled that the Second Amendment reserves to the American people the same weapons carried by the uniformed services, because the intention of the Second Amendment was to allow the American people to have the means to deter aggressive, abusive government. The Second Amendment is not about target shooting. It is not about hunting. In fact, the need for weapons to hunt with was taken as a given during the 1700s. It was completely beyond question. That's why the Second Amendment specifically enumerates military-style weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't know if you noticed that, like, in November, it is said that 63% of the electorate here in California voted for Proposition 63, while 35% or 36% voted against it. I don't know how true that was. It's a kind of a worrying fact.
Well, you've got a heavy liberal population in California who believes the brainwashing, that guns will just wake up in the middle of the night, walk into the bedroom, and shoot their owners. But as a reminder, we're now aware that there is, in fact, massive election fraud in our system, and it's not confined just to the presidential race. I remember when California had that proposition, I think it was 37, on GMO labeling. And there were allegations of massive election fraud to get that one defeated. Do you think that the gun grabbers are going to hesitate to use whatever means they can get to get their agenda passed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I'm saying I don't know if if you've seen any move in the courts and stuff by the gun owner organizations. To fight 63, you know, because
I haven't, but I'm not looking because I'm focused on other issues right now. But I'm going to presume that all these various gun rights organizations are going to push back on this. The amazing thing, of course, the gun grabbers are saying, well, you don't need those weapons. Okay, well, you don't need to be driving a Mercedes. You don't need to have a chauffeured car to go to your job here. It's just something that you want to have. And the same thing applies to gun owners. I think the best example of that are the people who collect and restore historical and antique guns. But in the end, the Second Amendment says we are allowed to have the guns that we want to have for any law-abiding purpose we want to have them for. Target shooting, hunting, putting food on the table, driving out criminals from our homes, and I've actually had to do that once myself. And that's really what it comes down to. Sometimes I tend to think the gun control people are secretly being funded by organized crime, because the more you disarm the law-abiding citizens, the greater crime is going to occur, Chicago being an absolutely wonderful example of that. A totally disarmed law-abiding population and an out-of-control, very heavily armed criminal element.
Well, before things get any better, perhaps the state may try to secede from the country, and then part of the state may try to secede from California in return, and, you know, we'll probably have a better Second Amendment environment then. You know, who knows?
I would like to see that, but I got to tell you, with Jerry Brown needing all this money from Donald Trump to deal with all the devastation caused by the collapsing infrastructure, I think secession is now off the table.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, all right, Dr. Schoen, I heard that you were in Germany one time there, Mike.
Yep, bitte, and...
I was there, too.
Okay, what part?
Central Germany, Hessen, Frankfurt, over with the Army.
I was working in Munich, but I did get a chance to get out into the countryside to Erin Kimsey and some of the other places. It was just absolutely beautiful. It was. You
30
know,
years
you,
ago, yeah.
The thing I really liked was so cool. It was such a shock. You could go into a restaurant there, and people were allowed to bring their pet dogs into the restaurant with them. And the dogs had worked the room, going from table to table and just begging for...
Mm-hmm.
And that that was so wonderful. What a shame we're not allowed to do that here.
No, I know. Even those people that take their dogs here to the stores and stuff, but still, you know, it was a beautiful country. German people, excellent people.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Everything and stuff, you know?
Yes.
Just the social, political climate... Now and then, you know, I just hope our military gets pulled out of there soon.
Yeah, the other thing about the German people, very highly developed sense of having fun. That was another thing that made it a great experience. All right, well, listen.
Dr. Schoen, take care.
Bitte, and we'll talk to you again some other time. All right, getting on back to the news here. All right, we're talking about Oroville, and we're still, obviously, there's a degree of concern because the heavy rains have started. Across that whole watershed that feeds into Lake Oroville, the rain is already much heavier than they were initially predicting. Again, those long-term forecasts can change drastically, and maybe it'll be heavy but short. We'll know when we know. But again, a lot of people are very concerned over the fact that Governor Jerry Brown is spending so much money on the illegals and none for the infrastructure. When Donald Trump announced his $1 trillion infrastructure improvement project, Governor Jerry Brown sent in a request for $100 billion worth of work, and the Oroville Dam was not even mentioned. And the reason that is of concern is the concrete spillway, the main spillway, developed cracks back in 2009. And we had to read about this in the European press, not the American corporate media. Those cracks were painted over with a concrete solution rather than properly repaired or replaced as they should have been. Now, that paint over, that patch and pray approach, doesn't really work because the constant flow of water down that spillway is still leaking through those cracks, and it washes out the soil underneath the concrete, creating a void, which in turn leaves the overhead concrete without any support from below until it simply cracks and breaks off. And it's a large-scale version of the same mechanism which results in potholes in your road. Rain leaks through the macadam, it flushes out a void underneath, a car drives on over, and it caves on in, and you've got yourself a pothole. And if you look at the depth of the crater from that initial collapse on the main spillway, you can see there had to be a gigantic void underneath there that's just been growing and growing since 2009. And that is what happened over there. So it's a classic case of mismanagement. Building a dam, you can stand up there at the christening and get all kinds of political capital from it. But when it comes down to maintaining the existing infrastructure, you can't get press for it. You can't get votes for it. And that tends to cloud and skew politicians' agenda, what's important, what isn't. But we're seeing this article that came on out from Zero Hedge, where this Oroville crisis is exposing the vulnerability of America's entire national dam system, because there are other dams that are considered to be weakened from their original construction. There are some dams they're trying to reinforce right now, especially the earthen dams, by literally drilling down from the top and either pouring in more concrete or putting in any kind of other bracing. You can't just let these things sit there and not take care of them properly without courting a disaster down the road somewhere. Okay, somebody just sent me this from the chat room. Apparently, the Trump Organization is running a mainstream media accountability survey, and we just posted it to the front of whatreallyhappened.com, and I invite you all to go on over and fill that out and help the Trump Organization get a feel for what is going wrong with the corporate media and how much trust they still have among ordinary people like you and I. All right, we're going to grab another phone call. Francis in Vancouver, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Francis, are you there? Hello, Francis?
Can you hear me?
Ah, there you are. Okay, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the firestorm erupting in Washington, D.C. right now. And Tillerson chopped the head off the State Department and emptied out the seventh floor with all the bigwigs up there that were basically a bunch of traitors anyway. And now the other thing is Trump posted a little while ago that, quote, the fake news media, failing New York Times, CNN, and NBC News, and many more, is not my enemy. It's the enemy of the American people. Sick. And then there's this huge response, like David Frum and all these other lowlifes and stuff just screaming at Trump and just flipping out. Like, it's total open warfare now. I'm loving it.
Well, you know, it's amazing. Trump, you know, needs to get the leaks under control. He's got to identify the leakers, and he's got to get rid of them. He has enemies within his gate. He's literally dealing with treason from within, as it were. And he's got to lock down his own administration. I'm worried about how naive he is about the reality of dirty politics in Washington, D.C., and he'd better learn fast about that. But, again, this is really an issue with showing the bias of the media that they made a big, big deal over this phone call between Michael Flynn and the U.S., Russia's ambassador to the U.S., and there wasn't really anything in there of any issue. It wasn't a violation of the Logan Act, and outside of a violation of the Logan Act or espionage giving away secrets like McCain just did to that Russian comedian, there isn't a story there. The media just created this out of thin air as a form of political assassination on one of Trump's lieutenants. And it's time for Trump to start fighting back on that.
Well, if they want to prosecute somebody, why don't they prosecute Victoria Noodle Man?
I'd like to see that happen. Anyway, listen, gotta let you go, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we reported on the arrest the other day, but apparently 12 TSA agents have just been indicted for smuggling $100 million worth of cocaine out of Puerto Rico over the last 18 years. How dare they cut in on the CIA's action? Those guys are gonna burn. On a more serious note, there's a study that's been done out at Los Alamos that has confirmed something we all suspected for a long time. These new millimeter wave airport scanners do, in fact, alter DNA. Now, the original scanners were X-ray. Obviously, there's a risk there. Then they went to these scanners with the high-frequency particles called terahertz photons. But a study conducted by Boyan S. Alexandrov at the Center for Nonlinear Studies at Los Alamos National Laboratory revealed the terahertz waves can unzip double-stranded DNA, creating bubbles that could significantly interfere with processes such as gene expression and DNA replication. All right, we're going to grab one more phone call here from Steve in California. What's on your mind?
Yeah, there, Michael. You had a caller talking about Prop 63, the gun rights and the ammunition and gun clips. You know, I guess they're just not smart enough to learn from the past, because whenever you start having these restrictions, you create a black market for something, because there's a demand. There will always be the supplier. So I bet you can go into the inner city, the gangs in L.A., and I bet you can find clips that far exceed 10 rounds in a clip. I'm sure that
you can 3D print them. You can 3D print them. right now, 3D printing is taking off to the point where you can make pretty much any gun that you want. It started out with the original plastic ones, but now there are 3D printing setups that do metal scintillation, and you can just literally create all the weapons that you want. And the issue is not the guns. The issue is having a society in which nobody's got a reason to go on out and commit crimes. Except, and part of that, of course, is going to be getting these prescription antidepressants under control, because that gets people whacked out.
Well, your last story, just you just mentioned, the TSA. There's a demand for drugs in this country. The TSA and dishonest people know there's a demand, and they're the ones that'll be suppliers. Look at it.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Banning drugs just created a highly profitable smuggling industry dominated by the Central Intelligence Agency. Banning guns will just create another product line for the smugglers to bring on in. The American people will be disarmed. The criminals at the bottom of the food pyramid for the drug lords will have access to weapons, and we'll all be living like we live in Chicago, where it's completely out of control.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to let you go here. Coming up on the top of the hour, and the lovely lady Claire here, and huge amounts of information coming out about vaccines. There's a big fist fight getting ready to happen between the truth about vaccines and those who profit from the lies. Going to do a break for station identification, and we'll be back with the lovely Lady Claire. And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show, hour number three. And for those of you watching on BAM User, the lovely lady seated to my immediate left is the Lady Claire, who is now in a new reconfigured studio so that she's a little closer to the camera in response to the tsunami of fan emails saying we want to see more of Claire because she looks much better than you do.
Oh, stop it, dear.
And that's what they said. Mm. You're going to call our fans liars? We're going to
No.
What's first on your list?
Well, the cozy relationship between corporate media and the CIA. Now, sometimes these journalists' relationships with the agencies were tacit. Some were explicit. There was cooperation, accommodation, and overlap. Journalists provided a full range of clandestine services, from simple intelligence gathering to serving as go-between with spies of communist countries. Reporters shared their notebooks with the CIA. Editors shared their staffs. And some of these journalists were, I kid you not, Pulitzer Prize winners, distinguished reporters.
That may be how they got the Pulitzer Prize.
Oh, of course.
By playing along.
Of course, yeah.
You know, because if you've got a paid journalist pushing your propaganda,
yeah.
You want everybody to think, these are people I should listen to. We must give them awards and
people of conscience.
Gold things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And apparently correspondents who found that their association with the agency helped their work were sort of more inclined to do more of it for them. And they had the smallest category. Full-time CIA employees were masquerading as journalists abroad. And in many instances, CIA documents show journalists were engaged to perform tasks for the CIA with the consent of the management of America's leading alleged news organization.
Well, you know, this all comes out of Operation Mockingbird.
Oh, sure.
Which was the CIA's program to take control of corporate media. It began at the end of World War II,
mm-hmm.
And they discovered that the more the media consolidated,
mm-hmm.
The easier it was for the CIA to be directly influencing what the media is putting on out there.
Right, right. And the history of the CIA's involvement with the American press continues to be shrouded by an official policy of obfuscation and deception for the following principal reasons. First, the use of journalists has been among the most productive means of intelligence gathering employed by the CIA. And although the agency has cut back sharply on the use of reporters since 1973,
they say,
as a result of pressure from the media, some journalist operatives are still being posted abroad. Number two, further investigation into the matter, CIA officials say, would inevitably reveal a series of embarrassing relationships in the 50s and 60s with some of the most powerful organizations and individuals in so-called American journalism. Among the executives who lent their cooperation lavishly to the agency were William Paley of the Columbia Broadcasting System, Reed CBS, Henry Luce of Time, Inc., Arthur Hayes Sulzberger of the New York Times, Barry Bingham Sr. of the Louisville Courier-Journal, and James Copley of the Copley News Service. Other organizations that cooperated with the CIA include the American Broadcasting Company, ABC, National Broadcasting Company, NBC, AP, United Press International, Reuters, Hearst Newspaper, Scripps Howard, Newsweek Magazine, the Mutual Broadcasting System, and the Miami Herald and the old Saturday Evening Post and New York Herald Tribune. But by far the most valuable of these associations, according to officials at the CIA, have been with the New York Times, CBS, and Time, Inc. And folks, this is why the prostitutes and the deep state in America are so terrified of outlets like this. Because at last you've got some real news going on, and not the fake stuff they want to thrust down your throats to further their agenda of more war and more control over American citizens. So watch what you read, watch what you look at, educate yourself and the educate yourself and the people you care about. Then let's go on to a health and science issue.
Let's do that.
All right. Could your Fitbit data be used to deny you health insurance? Now, a lot of people have gotten into the craze of using the Fitbit, which monitors heart rate, et cetera, et cetera. And for some, it can help you earn cash from your health insurance company. Now, this sounds very lucrative to the people who participate and good for the companies who want healthier insurance customers. But it's not quite so simple. Under the program, people who have certain health insurance plans with United Healthcare can elect to wear a Fitbit activity tracker and share their data with the insurance company. The data would be analyzed by Qualcomm Life, a company that processes medical data from wireless sensors for doctors, hospitals, and insurance companies. And depending on how active participants are, as measured by the Fitbit, they could earn as much as $1,500 toward healthcare services each year. And the interest in wearing these trackable fitness devices is booming. More than half of the people who already own one believe their devices will help them increase their life expectancy by 10 years, although it's impossible to know that because the clinical trials necessary to figure that out won't happen for a decade.
I have a quick question,
yeah.
and I understand if you don't actually know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
The iWatch supposedly has a heart rate monitor in it as well and
mm-hmm.
can do many of the same functions as the Fitbit.
Mm-hmm.
Is it also sending your biological telemetry to somebody to peek in on what you're doing?
I don't know. I am not sure.
I think it's a good question to ask.
I think it is, because if it's sending that data without your permission, not a good thing.
I will not tolerate such uppity behavior in an appliance.
Right.
We're going to take a second here to do a shout-out to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining the network. The lovely Lady Claire is with us, and we're talking about this issue where health insurance companies are now having a deal where if you will wear one of those little Fitbit health monitors, and that the Fitbit is showing that you're leading a healthy life, that it will reduce your health insurance costs, which sounds like a good thing, but there is a downside, and that is that if you're not living a healthy lifestyle, mm-hmm. your rates could go up, or they could even drop you.
But it's possible, as you said, that this has a downside, particularly in light of recent political developments. The passage of the Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare insurance, companies were barred from denying coverage to customers who had pre-existing medical conditions at the time they signed up for insurance. But if that rule is lifted by Republicans in Congress, insurers may want to look at wearable devices for evidence that they could use to refuse to pay for patients' health care.
Well, you know, there's two sides to the insurance game, and that's taking the money in and refusing to pay it on out.
Yeah.
I understand in the case of your car, these new little gizmos
mm-hmm.
that fit into the standardized computer socket.
Yeah.
If you are a good, careful driver, you should get a result from that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if people with pre-existing conditions are being spied on expressly for the purpose of kicking them off the insurance program,
denying them,
there is a major problem there because you have somebody who technically is uninsurable, living in a country where health insurance is mandatory. And obviously, if the data read from their Fitbit and their pre-existing condition makes them a non-profit center, the only insurance they're going to get is going to cost more than their house.
Yeah, and that's going to kill people.
Yes.
Not to be able to access care. And so I would suggest to the majority party in Congress, how you handle this should be very, very carefully. I'd like to go over now to the Dakota Pipeline and a statement made by one of the executives.
Okay, well, before we do that,
okay.
I just did a quick little search here. And
okay.
Apparently there are allegations that Fitbit is not as accurate as the advertising would claim. That sometimes, especially if you're relaxed and calm, mm-hmm. it can't even detect your heartbeat at all. And so they're just filling in the data at that point. So we have this specter of your Fitbit misreporting your health information to your insurance company, mm-hmm. leading to the increase of your rates or termination of your policy, all on the basis of a computer error.
Yeah, not good at all.
Not going to get one of those things on me.
No, me neither. I would like to bop over to a statement made by Pipeline executive who compared the Dakota Access Pipeline protesters to terrorists. Top executive at the company building the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline said on Wednesday that pipeline opponents were like terrorists. Joey Mahmood, executive VP of Texas-based Energy Transfer Partners, said protesters have assaulted numerous pipeline personnel, destroyed millions of dollars worth of construction equipment, and even fired a pistol at a law enforcement officer during months of demonstrations against the pipeline.
Yeah, but we've got the pipeline company employing private security using tear gas and attack dogs.
I know.
Against the protesters. So I would be very careful about hurling a stone labeled terrorist inside that particular glass house.
I hear you. And my question is, where's Mahmood's proof? Where is the visual evidence that protesters were actually doing this?
This is 2017. We don't need no proof.
Dear?
Yeah.
In my world, heck yes, you do.
Well, look at the corporate media. I mean,
yeah.
All the stuff that's coming on out, they're just making allegations and smears and accusations, and there's no proof of any of it. And
yeah.
The attitude of the corporate media right now is, we shouldn't have to give you proof. We're the corporate media. You're supposed to just blindly believe us. Not anymore.
And what is interesting is that Mahmood actually omitted this comment about terrorism as he read his testimony aloud to a House Energy Subcommittee Wednesday. The comment was included in written remarks submitted to the panel. Now, I have to wonder what this guy is going to say if, because of budgetary restraints and intense value engineering going into the creation of the rest of this pipeline, if it breaks down as spectacularly as some of our American Indian protesters have indicated it might, what's he going to say then? Because the pipelines are not that safe. They are not built bulletproof in terms of their construction and engineering.
I wouldn't have exactly used that word because obviously in the case mm-hmm. of intentional sabotage, the pipeline company if anything, valid in saying that terrorism is involved.
Yeah.
But we do know these oil companies are interested in profits, and they cut corners where they ought not to, think Deepwater Horizon. We've had other oil pipeline spills in that very same area. We've had that huge one that was down there in the southeast a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Lakota would be far less concerned about this pipeline on their territory if these pipelines had a record of safety and durability.
Exactly.
But they certainly don't.
Oh, heck no. They don't. And once you foul the water table, it's very difficult to go in there and really clean it up in a way that the water is still not a problem.
You literally have to dig up all the soil that's contaminated with the oil and dispose of it somewhere before you have a chance of having clean water running through it. Look how long it took to clean up up in Alaska where they had that huge oil tanker spill.
Right.
Even after it was officially declared clean, people were going down there with cameras and photographing. It was still oily, still rainbow
mm-hmm.
on the water.
Yeah.
It really is very, very difficult. Now, the Lakotas do have another issue, and that is that according to the treaty, that the Lakota signed with the U.S. government that is, in fact, their land the pipeline is crossing on. And so their issue is the U.S. government does not have a right to give their land away to anybody for any reason whatsoever. And, of course, the only reason the pipeline went that particular route was there was another nearby town on the pipeline's original route of, I should point out, mostly white people who said, we don't want that here. It's going to leak and poison our soil and our water. And the pipeline company said, well, we'll just put it on the Indian land. Who cares about them? And I think that attitude is a big part of the anger of the Lakotas. There is merit there, and it would be nice to find a solution that works for everybody, a combination of a new route that protects the water supply, which is the big issue, and honors the treaty obligation of the United States.
I would love to see that happen. I really would. I would like to move on over now to something that is very strange and very disturbing to me. The corporate media is completely silent as mystery illness plagues residents 1 year after historic gas leak. Guys, remember about a year ago the largest methane gas leak in U.S. history?
Porter Ranch.
Porter Ranch. Yep. And to this day, residents are continuing to experience significant adverse health consequences. As SoCalGas, the company responsible for the blowout, uses fabricated gas shortages to justify the reopening of Aliso Canyon gas storage facility, which has been shut down indefinitely since the leak occurred. And a local doctor out there is now speaking out, and sir, you have my respect for this. Dr. Jeffrey Nordella has been treating Porter Ranch residents since the blowout of an underground methane storage well, which caused tons of methane gas to spew in the atmosphere on October 2015. A total of 5 billion cubic feet of methane was released into the atmosphere from October 23rd to February 18th, or, as he states, enough pollution to match the annual output of nearly 600,000 cars, the Guardian noted shortly after it was sealed. But Nordella has said that since the gas leak began, he has been inundated with patients of all ages. He is seeing abnormal pulmonary functions among some of those patients, low red blood cell counts in others. He's reviewed the files of residents whose family members have died, and he's seen a rare case of anemia that can be connected to toxic exposure. Nordella says that the symptoms he's seeing in these patients are clearly different from those with a common upper respiratory tract infection, seasonal allergies, sinus infection, and viral bronchitis. He also said that multiple contaminants could be causing the variety of health
that
issues.
That is the issue I was going to bring on it wasn't just methane coming out of that leak. If it had been just methane, it would have gone into the atmosphere, combined with oxygen, produced water vapor and more carbon dioxide, and that would have pretty much been the end of it. But you need to remember there's a lot of other things in those underground strata that were being blown out with the methane, and it was dangerously close to this now defunct laboratory where they were conducting tests with nuclear reactors and biological weapons.
Bad stuff.
And they tried experiments with a sodium-cooled reactor. They had a partial meltdown on there. It's probably second only to Hanford in terms of the degree of contamination that is there on the soil. And they tested rocket engines there, and there's all kinds of fuels that spilled into the ground. That stuff, in all the years since they were doing that, probably was being blown out of the ground with that methane as well. And that those kind of chemicals, especially the radioactive ones, could cause the kind of symptoms there. The remnants of the rocket fuel, respiratory issues, exposure to radiation can lower your red blood cell count. The fact is we never actually got an actual detailed analysis of what was coming out of the hole. They just kept saying, it's methane, it's methane, it's methane, it's methane. Well, there obviously were other things in there that we should have been made aware of.
Now, Mike, let me ask a question on this.
Yeah.
Of course, SoCalGas is a huge utility in California. Is there a legal way that the people who've been afflicted by these illnesses could file a class action lawsuit against it?
I'm sure that there could be. What they'd have to do is, first of all, find out what was coming out of that Porter Ranch gas leak and document that there were components other than methane and then link those components to the illnesses being displayed by these patients.
Right.
And I don't know what the total number of patients are, because class action lawyers like to have big crowds because it means more money.
Mm-hmm.
But this is exactly the kind of situation that Aaron Brockovich dealt with,
right,
with PG&E,
yeah,
and the hexavalent chromium.
Yeah, and you would have to do discovery on SoCalGas in terms of compelling them to release that information, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd have to do discovery on them,
yeah,
and you'd also have to find a way around the protections on that abandoned laboratory, because
mm-hmm,
much of that is still considered classified information.
Yeah. But I do think that the people, Porter Ranch, who got hurt in this way, I hope that they find some justice, because this is just insane that they are so ill so long after the actual initiating event.
It's not just the people around Porter Ranch. We're,
yeah,
discovering that in the eyes of corporations and the government, the civil population are a disposable commodity. They get damaged, throw them away. Plenty more on the way across that border. We got to take a break for commercials, and we'll be right back. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And Claire, what's your next story?
Well, this comes to us via antiwar.com. And the title of the article is Israel's Vision for the Future is Terrifying. And it goes on to say that empirical historical evidence combined with a little common sense are enough to tell us of the type of future that Israel has in store for the Palestinian people. Perpetual apartheid or ethnic cleansing and a very aggressive annexation of housing and land.
Well, basically, Israel wants the Palestinians to be gone one way or the other.
Yeah.
And grab their land.
Yeah. And this passing of the regularization bill on 6 February is all we need to understand to imagine this Israeli envisioned future. The new law allows the Israeli government to retroactively recognize Jewish outposts built without official permission on privately owned Palestinian land. Let that settle in, folks. On privately owned Palestinian land. All?
Now, it's,
yeah,
important to remember,
yeah,
that none of this is valid under international,
no,
law, and it would never survive a case in international court. But Israel doesn't really care about the international courts. They see themselves as above the law. And it's a reminder, both in the case of present-day Israel and even on Nazi Germany, just because something is declared to be a law does not automatically mean it's right. And
right,
we're seeing that exact,
mm-hmm,
example now, where Israel is essentially trying to say it's legal for us to steal the Palestinians' land,
right,
just like previous presidential administration said it's now legal for us to torture people.
Yeah, yeah. And when the UN went ahead with UN Security Council Resolution 2334 condemning illegal settlements, Israel's response was the announcement of construction of over 6,000 new housing units to be built through occupied Palestinian territories and the construction of a brand new settlement, the first in 20 years. And the new law paves the way for annexation of large areas of the occupied West Bank. And it's sort of ironic and sad, Mike, that since Donald Trump was sworn in as president, it looks like Israel has felt liberated from its obligation to doublespeak. For decades, Israeli officials spoke passionately about peace and then did everything in their power to hinder the attainment of peace. Now they don't care.
Well, this is one area in which I most assuredly do not agree with the President of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
But again, one of my concerns about Trump coming into the White House,
uh-huh,
is his dangerous degree of naivete,
right,
and the fact that much of his view of the world seems to be built on what he's been seeing on TV shows and movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I, even though he understands the degree to which the corporate media is being deceptive against him,
mm-hmm,
he still has not taken that mental exercise of saying, okay, what else have they been lying about all these many decades?
Yeah,
he needs to do that,
yeah,
and start seeing the world as it really is, or he's never going to be an effective president.
I hope someone brings him up to speed on that, and very quickly, someone in his inside circle he trusts. It's not going to be Jared Kushner, though.
No, apparently
nope,
not.
Nope. And I have, on this blog, repeatedly warned Palestinian officials that if they did not peacefully work together to create a nation state and demand one from Israel, that they would be left with something even smaller than Liechtenstein. And these settlements have been engineered to have prevented any contiguous Palestinian state from existing right now.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, this didn't happen by chance, folks. You know, the Israeli government didn't collectively wake up one morning and say, gee, I wonder if there is, can we have a Palestine that's not contiguous? No, this was completely deliberate. And, Mike, didn't you have a friend send you a map of Palestine?
Yeah, I did. I showed it on the camera the other day.
Okay.
It's an 1894 map of Palestine.
Yeah.
And obviously, no mention of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I question that contiguous aspect of it, though, because, after all, the state of Michigan is not contiguous.
Yeah.
Okay. And neither, for that matter, is the entire United States when you consider Alaska and Hawaii.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got to take a break for commercial.
But it's harder. It's harder.
It's I don't know. We're kind of out here. We'll be back after these commercials. Hello, hi, America. Welcome back to our show. You next story is?
Well, General Mattis has announced that the U.S. and NATO are going to escalate the fight against ISIS. Following up on yesterday's report that the Pentagon is likely to recommend a significant deployment of U.S. ground troops to Syria by month's end, Secretary of Defense James Mattis confirmed that the U.S. as well as NATO, as an alliance, are preparing to escalate the fight against ISIS in both Iraq and Syria.
If only they could actually hit ISIS instead of all those hospitals and bakeries and water treatment plants.
Yeah, and Mattis played up the idea of a sustained effort to fight against ISIS, saying it was a fight that needs to be accelerated, and one he is confident all of NATO is committed to accelerating, although he said the fight would not be over quickly. At the same time, Mattis said he was not ready to embrace a specific recommendation for a deployment of ground troops and wanted to talk with other NATO members before deciding on specifics. He wouldn't rule out making such a recommendation, however. Now, this is largely in keeping with yesterday's report, which suggested that the final recommendations probably wouldn't come until sometime around the end of the month. We're about 2 weeks out, folks, from the end of February. Not going to be that long. Now, Mattis is in Brussels right now, giving plenty of opportunity to discuss the deployment with other defense ministers. General Mattis, Claire over here on Oahu, and I'm channeling the late Joan Rivers just a little and pretty horribly. Sir, can we please talk? Have you spoken to your Syrian and Russian counterparts about this? And the reason I'm asking is because without permission from the Syrian government, this is going to appear as tantamount to a U.S.-NATO invasion of Syria. Russia's not going to be very happy about that and may respond militarily.
Well, again, that seems to be the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think what's going on here is there are all these attacks on Donald Trump to keep him tied up, busy, on the defensive, while the military-industrial complex cranks up to create a war for him to have to inherit.
Yeah.
It is an invasion of Syria.
Yeah.
The U.S. and NATO have no business being in Syria.
No.
And they don't have the invitation of the Syrian government. It is an invasion, and it's just under another flimsy excuse, like all these other invasions. We're going after ISIS. Saddam has nuclear weapons. Assad is gassing his own people.
Yeah.
And again, I keep asking this question of the American people. How many more times do you have to be lied into a war of conquest until you accept you are being lied into a war of conquest?
Yeah. And there's another very significant development that pairs with this story, and it was reported a couple of days ago at globalresearch.ca. Again, generally a pretty sober, decently researched blog to which I link frequently. And the report says, Syria War Report, Russia is deploying more military police to Syria. And the good reason is that intense clashes have been ongoing in the province of Syrian province of Daraa since last weekend, when the joint forces of the Free Syrian Army's Southern Front and Jabhat Fateh al-Sham, formerly Jabhat al-Nusra, attacked government troops in the neighborhood of Manchiaya. Since then, militants have made some gains in the area, but suffered notable casualties. And so far, the joint militant forces have reached the Bilal Mosque roundabout, where they faced stiff resistance from governmental forces. If the militant sees the Munshia Great Mosque, they will be in control of about half of the neighborhood. And Moscow has deployed an additional military battalion to Syria.
A military police battalion.
Yeah. Now, that's the good reason. But I'm wondering if Putin hasn't seen the NATO-U.S. plan to invade northern Syria as the real reason. And, Mike, how many folks are in a battalion?
It's about 1,000.
Yeah. Okay. And the battalion was sent from the Russian Republic of Industiga in order to boost security of military personnel during operations in the war-torn country. And according to Yukarov, who is leading this, the servicemen will focus on protecting personnel of the Russian Air Group and the Center for Syrian Reconciliation.
Okay. Well, this is why they're sending military police.
Yeah.
These are not frontline combat troops. They're obviously there to provide security in the rear echelon areas.
Yeah.
In the absence of any kind of a police force of the Syrian government itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's still very, very disturbing. And I would not bet against seeing more actual combat troops coming up from Russia in the very near future.
Well, we're certainly seeing combat troops coming from the United States. They're talking about an actual ground invasion of Syria. And again, nobody is believing all this nonsense about ISIS and Al-Qaeda because we know that ISIS and Al-Qaeda have been working for the U.S. government to get this mess going.
Right.
And certainly here on the island of Oahu, we're hearing all this military training cranking on up.
Yeah.
Training flights, helicopters, fighter jets. They're having artillery exercises that we can hear. It's a very weird thing because even knowing that it's not aimed at us, it's a very strange experience to go to sleep at night to the sound of artillery.
Yeah, it's very unsettling. And there was one very large big bang, right about 10, right?
Yeah, something like that.
And I think I jumped about 2 inches off the mattress. I'm not exactly sure. I didn't have any way to measure it. But it was
I think it was a new record.
Yeah, very disturbing. Let's go back to D.C. And apparently Chaffetz is seeking charges against former Hillary IT aide Brian Pagliano.
Oh, good.
Now, back in September...
I'm so delighted to know he's still alive.
Yeah. Okay. Back at the height of the Hillary email gate investigation, it was Clinton's IT aide who helped her set up a private email server, and that was Brian Pagliano. And he has apparently decided that congressional subpoenas like federal record retention laws were merely optional suggestions that do not require compliance. As such, Pagliano elected to skip not just one, but two congressional hearings in front of Jason Chaffetz, House Oversight Committee, despite his direct involvement in setting up her private email servers.
Well, there's a complication there because Brian Pagliano actually got an immunity deal, which means he may not invoke the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah.
And so for him to justify these congressional subpoenas, assuming he is still alive, Chaffetz can have him arrested, thrown in chains, and dragged before the congressional panel that way.
Well, the operative question is, are they going to find him alive and will they be able to catch up with him? Because my guess is one or two things has happened. He has either fled to a country with no extradition treaty with the United States, or he is shark excrement. And either way, it's too little too late.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real question.
Yeah.
I have not been able to find any indication Brian Pagliano is still alive. And we're way past the point of putting his picture on the milk cartons. But when you look at the large number of dead bodies around the Clintons, especially like five of them in the last couple of months of the campaign under bizarre circumstances, the reality is that I'm very concerned for Brian Pagliano whether he is, in fact, still alive or not. I'd like to find some indication one way or the other.
Yeah. Let's go back to economic situations here at home.
Okay.
And this comes from Zero Hedge. One can see that there are a lot of problems with the American economy that are coming to a head.
Yes.
And one, the levels of homelessness, poverty, and idle populations in California across the country. And the world that's divided between the 1% and the struggling 99%. And economically, it looks like things are coming to the brink, and there are far too many people who have almost been forced to give up at the individual level. This crisis has given the impetus for cities like Santa Ana to take drastic action. And what they're doing is they're literally encircling their homeless camps with prisons.
The question would be, are the homeless allowed to go on out and try and at least find work or something to eat?
No.
So they're basically going to just let these people starve to death inside these prison camps.
Yeah. And if cities like Santa Ana are allowed to do this, they can do it to anyone. And if civil unrest comes, perhaps in combination with mass unemployment and a crash stock market and a monetary system and great misery, those keeping society in check may feel compelled to come down with a heavy hand. And
let me get this clear here. Yeah. I'm having a bit of trouble here with this particular part of Claire's clarification here. We have governments that are spending millions and millions of dollars supporting illegal immigrants who stepped across the border without permission.
Right.
And a flood of refugees fleeing areas where we're told they're fleeing the violence of the wars started by the United States. And yet, legal American citizens who have fallen out the bottom of our crashing economic system are being put into concentration camps.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it is despotic in the extreme. It's horrific.
It's insane.
It's insane. And, but I mean, it's sort of indicative of what I would call the beginning of the great unraveling of American society.
Well, this may be what William Crystal had in mind, where he said the white middle-class people need to go and be replaced by the migrants. Look at how many formerly middle-class white people are among the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
When you and I were involved in that food program over at St. Liz's, we had our Buddha on the Road moment. We discovered that a lot of these homeless and hungry people weren't street bums. Some of them are, but a lot of them were people who had come to Hawaii with promises of jobs, and they'd had the good jobs. The economy tanked, loss of tourism, TSA and the rest of it, didn't have enough money to get back to the mainland, and wound up homeless. And these are people with college degrees and long career tracks for whom there are no jobs. And they're living on the streets. They're accepting handouts to survive. Now you're telling me some cities are making, well, we're already hearing that a lot of cities are making it a crime to feed the homeless people. Like, we're on an island. Where are they going to go? Walk back to the mainland?
Yeah.
Take a step, come up for air. Take another step, come up
not
for
happened.
Air. I don't think it's going to work.
No, not at all.
And yet we've got all this tax money that is going for all these illegal immigrants to come into the country and just have all kinds of free stuff, bring all these refugees in. There is something seriously skewed, and of course we know what it is. If this all goes back to that dream of George Soros to have a one-world government and a one-world population of mutts just blended together with no sense of historical, regional, or cultural identity, no sense of who they really are, in order to make it easier to control them. And again, the warning shot was from William Crystal, where he's actually saying we need to get rid of white middle class people for the betterment of whatever dream it is that they've got out there in their adult little heads.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things this article started to comment about was when this thing starts to unravel, making do in the current atmosphere won't cut it. In the aftermath of what is coming, many people will be desperate. Tent cities and migrating Americans looking for temporary work will return. Millions more will flock to government welfare programs and be dragged into the dregs of collectivist measures to ride out the bad times. They are moving to sweep up the disarray of a society that is crumbling and a financial landscape that is no longer survivable for a wide spectrum of the general population.
Well, the financial system is not set up for the general population.
Yeah.
The financial system is set up to maximize profits to the money junkies.
Mm-hmm.
Again, any nation enslaved to a private central bank has a limit on its life expectancy from when that private central bank is first set up until the point where the accumulated debt crushes the system down. And all during that whole process, the real wealth of the nation is squeezed out of the general population and poured into the pockets of the bankers. That's the design. And so, from the point of view of the money junkies, and our society today is exactly what they intended it to be. They have all the wealth, and we're out here just struggling just merely to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to tell you, dear, I think it's the dirt that's keeping our Honda together right now.
I thought it was the rust.
Rust and dirt, yes.
Rust and dirt. I don't dare wash that car. It'll fall apart.
Yes. Okay. Next, it appears that NATO is seeking further buildup of its troops. And after almost 2 years of buildup in the Baltic Sea area of Eastern Europe, NATO is running out of places plausibly near Russia to justify putting in more troops. They see the Black Sea, however, as the next big target for buildup, with the first U.S. troops arriving earlier this week in Bulgaria and Romania. The Obama administration started this buildup in 2014 in the Baltic, taking up the idea of a Russian invasion of Eastern Europe. And even though the invasion never happened, Obama and his successor, President Trump, have dutifully continued the buildup with no signs of showing down.
Here's where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
It's like the situation with Iran, where they're talking Iranian aggression, Iran is going to do this, Iran is going to do that. Iran has not initiated a war of conquest against another country in 200 years. Russia has never initiated a war against the West in all of history.
Yeah.
The closest they got was going into Poland in World War II, but that was initiated by Germany with Russia as an ally.
Right.
Russia is not interested in invading Europe. They're not interested in invading the United States of America for a very common sense reason. Europe and the United States are financial disasters about to happen.
Yeah.
They're in chaos. Their infrastructure is crumbling. Putin doesn't want Europe or the United States. He's got enough problems at home to solve without taking on ours as well.
Yes.
This idea that Russia is coming to get us is a myth to trick you out of your money and the lives of your children to support this out-of-control military-industrial complex, just like President Eisenhower warned us it was going to do.
Yeah. It appears that NATO and the U.S. have lost their collective mind on this issue.
Not from their point of view. This is what they do, where, you know, war is great, war is fun, war is the, you know, the galvanizing principle for all of civilizations.
And the issue with Bulgaria and Romania is, despite all of the Pentagon hype, these nations aren't really even particularly close to Russia and don't even have the proximity to the enclave of Kaliningrad that northern European nations cling to as proof of the Russian threat.
Well, you know how great those Russians are at pole vaulting. We've seen that at the Olympics prior
yeah.
to them being black.
You
know,
yeah.
Putin is going to pole vault over Poland and come down into, you know,
oh, come on,
with a nuclear bomb strapped to his back
and
sarin gas hidden
no.
in his nostrils.
No. You know, another thing I'd like to turn to before our next break. The Saudis are apparently slaughtering more women and children in the U.S.-backed war in Yemen. Apparently, it doesn't really matter who's sitting in the Oval Office. Blood continues to flow in the Middle East.
Well, again, a little qualifier.
Yeah.
This whole constant attack on Donald Trump may be just intended to tie him up so that he can't step out and say what the heck is going on in Russia and Yemen. Maybe the goal is to simply keep him paralyzed.
And distracted.
For 4 years while the war machine moves on.
And in the latest report from Yemen, news has emerged of the death of 9 women and 1 child in the latest act of U.S.-approved Saudi barbarism. Reuters reports that warplanes...
There it is.
Okay.
All right, we've got to take a commercial break. We'll pick this up.
Yep.
Last segment of our program on Powhana Friday coming right up. Aloha America, welcome back to our show, our final segment of our Powhana Friday program, and you were going to finish up this story about Yemen.
Yeah. Apparently, the Saudi-led coalition struck a house north of Yemen's capital where a crowd of mourners was gathered. Another double tap. A resident said on Thursday, killing 9 women, a child, and injuring dozens. The Saudi coalition is looking into it. Yeah, they're looking into it like pigs fly. Sorry.
That kid had a Stinger missile hidden inside his backpack.
Yeah. Mourners had gathered there to offer condolences after a woman had died. People heard the sound of planes and started running from the house, but then the bombs fell directly on the house. Roof collapsed, blood everywhere, a second resident of Ashira.
First question, what was the military justification for the strike?
There is none that they will state.
No, it's a campaign of terror
to
terrorize the Yemeni people into accepting the U.S.-created, internationally approved, ruling puppet junta.
And I will share very clearly. I love my country. I appreciate all the opportunities I have had from a standpoint of education and beyond and to do some things I love to do. But I am really, right now, and I'll be brutally honest, I'm very ashamed of this country.
No, and we're ashamed of the government.
The government of this country, yes. Because being a partner in war crimes is never something that I signed on for as an American citizen who does love her country. And President Trump has just signed off on Saudi and Bahraini governments getting more bombs and bullets. Now, the Bahraini government is on the list of the most brutally oppressive governments in the Middle East, with a tone-deaf and 21st-century blind Sunni al-Khalifa monarchy, which continues to violently suppress its Shiite majority. Now, Mike, this has gotten so bad that peaceful demonstrators have been met with massive arrests, tortured into confessions, and not only the protesters, but also for the medical first responders who cared for them. And I know that Bahrain is home of the Fifth Fleet. President Trump, I'm talking directly to you now. Isn't there somewhere else you could possibly put the Fifth Fleet, please?
You're assuming they could actually move. I mean, look at the Zumwalt and the
Beraldar
Fort.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a big bluff. They towed them in at night and they may be stuck there.
Yeah.
As far as Saudi Arabia, complicating that situation, apparently Saudi Arabia has now issued a warning to Trump to maintain Saudi oil imports, or Saudi Arabia is going to start pulling out of their friendship with the United States, which might be good news for the people of Yemen.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's Make America Great, Buy America, Use Our Resources, is having repercussions around the world. And I understand why Saudi Arabia is upset. They're in serious economic difficulty because they went along with this harebrained oil price war against Russia under Barack Obama. And now they need to keep exporting oil to try and get out of this economic mess. And you have Donald Trump saying less foreign imports and more domestic production. And Saudi Arabia is going to be very, very unhappy about that.
Yeah, there have even been demonstrations in Saudi Arabia, which, for most of its existence, was unheard of.
Okay, there's the music. It's time for Claire and I to get out of here. We've got errands to do this afternoon, all kinds of pamphlets to distribute, derbies to smash.
Yes.
We'll be back Monday here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Have yourselves a really good weekend. Stay informed. Stay skeptical. Please share what you know with everybody that you know. Thanks for all the cool presents and everything that you're sending in. And we'll be back Monday. Aloha, America.
Aloha.